This is the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. It's the home of coaching and training services based in, get ready for this, folks, two concepts, athletic longevity and athletic fitness. We're your hosts, Jay-Z and PK. And PK, good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, John.
Oh, man. So before we went live, you know, we were just chatting about, okay, getting close to year end and, you know, kind of reflecting, looking at this year, just a banter chat. And I think we probably should have hit record because some of the things we were saying possibly had merit for any listener who's, you know, motivated to be a lifetime athlete. Hey, thank you for being with us, by the way. And hey, did you eat breakfast yet today?
Me? No, I did not. I've had a coffee and now a tea.
Well, folks, we usually do this fairly early in the morning just to, you know, set that out there. But man, I don't know what got into me. I woke up feeling like a frigging wolf, man. And so I had an elk steak and a cup of bone broth with a little extra salt and creatine thrown in. Now I'm having a coffee. Wow.
So you just had to have some meat this morning. You woke up meat thirsty.
I felt like pounding pro, and now I'm roundhouse kicking it to the face.
I tell you, are you going to pump some iron today? Or are you just going to, like, you know, meathead out in the garage, throw around some sandbags and throw some iron around?
I'll tell you what I'm working on to be, you know, straightforward here.
Better be straightforward.
Every week, the training tribe, gets their content. And so, usually on Friday or Saturday, I will do the video, of their exercise programming for, they have to have it by Monday morning. I usually get it to them earlier than that, but I'll probably be doing put parts and pieces of next week's workouts. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's not a lot of iron throwing right now. In fact, I'll talk about that in a minute, but there's some jumping and some zesty things. I don't need to have a lot of carbs on board before or after, because I'm not going to smoke it. But I was just craving some delicious mead and from the fall harvest. So wonderful.
I love it. I love it. Well, you put me in a pro state of mind.
So here's how I would like to start out. You know, we're going to talk about, something in training known as the force velocity curve. Mm-hmm. Very well known. It's, you know, just kind of a physics relationship, if you will. And I would say, starting out with a question to frame this up is how I would go. And I'd do this. What are you training for? Just asking that, you know, to myself or someone else, almost rhetorically, that's a common question. And there are, of course, many, many answers. It could be an event such as a Spartan race. It might be a season of basketball. It could be a sport in general, like cycling. But when it gets down to the nuts and bolts, three of the five major capacities of human performance exist in a curvilinear relationship. Those are strength, power, and speed. And that's what we'll be discussing today on this force velocity curve. We're not dissing endurance or agility. We'll just hit those in another show.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited to learn more.
Okay, so before we jump into force velocity considerations, let's now visit, as you'd suggested earlier, or maybe I ended up doing it, what is the training tribe up to this week?
Let's talk about it.
Okay, so these cats are actually working on agility right now in their block, and we are using both multi-positional challenges and jumping in resistance circuits. That's a lot to say, mouthful. We're focusing on micro workouts right now that only take about 25 minutes, give or take, to complete. And one of the reasons is, you know, this time of year, one way to create the win is to have a workout that you can fit in despite things that might be going on with holiday scheduling, et cetera. Mm-hmm. There's some slow concentration activation work followed by a quick blast of high intensity. So mm-hmm. We're keeping the fun in fitness, but we're also making the workouts, easy to get in. If you love this kind of talk, like hearing about it, or interested, want to learn more, would like to train with us to make your athletic body even more athletic, well, check out the Training Tribe menu item at thelifetimeathlete.com.
Absolutely. If you like that, you know where to get it.
It is so zesty. Okay, so I'm going to have a sip of coffee before we dive in because it just looks so delicious.
Okay.
Okay. First, let's describe the force velocity curve in general. So what that really would be is you can picture a simple graph. Put force, maybe call it a big F, on the y-axis or the vertical line, and put velocity on the x-axis or horizontal line. You can use a big V if you want. And then just picture, you know, either a banana or a crescent moon, you know, that shape, with the concavity, you know, the open portion of it facing to the right, you know, out into the graph. And I'll go ahead and put this cover graphic on the podcast so that, you know, basically a person can just glance at it and say, oh, that's what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. I would love to learn more about the force velocity curve.
You did a great job of describing it. I'm seeing it very clearly in my mind.
Okay. So the main thing to appreciate is that these qualities are different, force and velocity, in other words, strength and speed. It's like the difference between a heavy squat, like your heaviest squat, measured in pounds or kilos, versus the best sprint speed that you can express in some measure, like let's say meters per second, which is common, kind of a radar gun glimpse. So there's your maximum amount of force or heaviest strength, and then there's your top end speed instantaneously. Those are the parameters we're talking about. And this all came up, or at least the reason I wanted to share this kind of thing with our audience, it came up from a client I had just the other day, or conversation I had with a client just the other day. And basically we were talking about this peripherally, and then he stopped me and he said, look, the reason I hire you as a professional who I think has expertise in this is because I trust you and I know that you know about this stuff, but I don't want to know more. I outsource my training, so you think about this stuff for me. And I was like, okay, got it. Just know that I'm looking at the force velocity relationships in your programming to get the most out of your beast. And he said, okay, great, let's move on.
He's like, just listen, I don't need to see how the sausage is made. Just give me the meat.
Yep, and make it spicy. And so, but I think there's probably some listeners who are like, yeah, I either want to know, you know, what's going behind the scenes in the body lab at TLA, or hey, I want to do this myself, and can you give me some tips or some pointers? So yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. Well, if we look specifically at that curve or that relationship, again, I'll just keep reminding us it's force and velocity, or strength and speed. We can put 5 points along the curve, you know, from the top in equal spacing down to, you know, that kind of bottom lower right portion. And just doing that arbitrarily, but those points on the curve will represent very specific terms that we use in training.
Okay, I'm tracking.
Okay, so that top point, that's max strength. Already mentioned that. That's grinding at a 90 to 100% of like a one repetition maximum effort, regardless of whether it's a lift or something else. The next one down is a hybrid. It's called strength speed, strength dash speed. And really that's, instead of grinding, now you're rolling. You're rolling at about 80 to 90% of that max, you know, 1 RM. But the movement, there's a bit more speed to the movement. Not a ton, but a bit more. Now that third point, that would be the middle in the curve. That's what's known as peak power. So now you're not grinding, you're not rolling, you're outputting at a broader range of a 1 RM, maybe 30 to 80%. And this is the classic force times distance divided by time relationship. And so, you know, power, it's an interesting thing. We're going to talk about it some more, but that's where that would reside on the curve. Now we do a flip-flop at that fourth point and we call it speed strength as opposed to strength speed. So now speed is primary, strength is secondary. So you were grinding, you were rolling, you were outputting, now you're cruising. So think, you know, the locomotive is picking up some steam, if you will, in the speed strength model, and you know, probably moving 30 to 60% of of a 1RM load, but it's moving more quickly now. And then finally, self-explanatory, we get to that fifth and final bottom right point, which is maximum velocity. Now you're blasting. So resistance is very light at less than 30% of 1RM. But again, that speed is at its utmost.
Got it. Okay. Makes sense.
Okay. So that's, we use that in training. It's borrowed from physics. And the question that comes up for me when I'm looking at a person that I'm working with and tasked with creating effective programming is, well, how does one train uniquely for each of those five classifications? What is the type of training that we use to elicit any one of those 5 points on the curve? So if I go through that in the same order, I'm going to say pretty basically strength is heavy resistance work. So it's generally lifts, very low reps, or exercises. Strength speed, now we might be a lot of times using variations in what we call tempo lifting, which we talked about on the show in the muscle contraction episode a few weeks back, where you might actually intentionally be changing bar path, the speed of the bar path or dumbbell or medicine ball or whatever it is that you're using, and mixing up squeezes and pauses and what have you. So it's still more of a strength focus, but we're changing speeds in there. Then when you get to peak powers, that middle point, this is really cool because power training, it's really when you apply resistance and speed and create this, kind of like ultimate hybrid beast. And those are like the resisted sled pushes, the pulls, the drags, those kinds of moves. When we want to build speed strength, which would be that fourth point, now we're looking at, let's move things a bit more rapidly, very explosively. So we've got Olympic lifts, we've got plyometrics, various, jumping, loading types of things, and throws, med balls, otherwise. That's a great speed strength model. And then finally, with velocity, generally once we get to max velocity, we're sprinting. We're just using the body in that natural human locomotion form at 95%+ effort.
Absolutely. Well, it does make sense. And I think that it's interesting in that, especially if we talk about the two regard to strength, specifically strength and then strength speed, you could be doing the same exercises, literally the same exercises, but just by varying the amount and the number of reps that you're doing or varying your tempo, you get different results, or you target different, points on that force velocity curve.
It's cool that you mentioned that, because I was just doing something like that yesterday. I was working with a client online doing some virtual training, and he was performing a bench press exercise. So this was a dumbbell bench on a flat bench, and he'd worked up to a 1RM lift. And so that was a slow, heavy grind lift, and that was a pure strength effort. And then after some recovery, we moved him into a strength speed model by using a little bit more of a tempo variation. I've dropped the weight down about 20% of that. So we were at 80% of his 1RM. And then we went to using that 31-31 tempo. So lower on three, pause on one, push up on three, pause on one. So again, just changing it up a little bit to not only get a great workout, but elicit some of those responses which we were targeting.
Absolutely. And the thing that I think is interesting about that is that if you're not being as deliberate or just acknowledging the variables and how significantly they change where you fit on the force velocity curve, then you can't target different areas. So I guess setting the table with all the things we've talked about so far, my question to you is, how might someone use periodization to get the max benefit from these different like this curve specific training for different purposes?
Oh, I love that question. Thank you. it's excellent because it allows us to kind of visit on elements of program design, which we touch on often, but from this perspective. And so, first of all, I would say for any individual, you know, whether you're doing it yourself or you're working with a coach, identify what you seem to be lacking as viewed as a liability or what we sometimes call a secondary attribute, and then work on it quite intensively if you're relatively far out from your competition or goal phase. So it's kind of an off-season focus, like, oh, okay, let's shore up something. And again, if a person says, gosh, you know, I just don't seem like I have the blank that I need. Is it the strength? Is it the speed? Is it the power? Oh, well, let's really work on bringing that up to a good level during the offseason. So that's the first thing I'd say.
Got it. And so when you say, I just don't seem to have the, let's just say, strength, would this just be like their feeling about it or in the context of their sport? Or is there, you know, the process of identifying, is it just thinking about what you've been able to do? Or is it something more, I guess, scientific than that?
You know, I think it can be all or any of those things. Mm. You know, a person's instincts and perceptions are outstanding. They're generally accurate. You know, you can tell, you know, if you are just moving as a human, you're like, you know, I'm good at these things, but I'm not quite as good as I want to be at these other things. Or again, as you indicated, in my specific sport, there's a certain component of participation or play or a metric where this one's not as good for me as the others. And so, yeah, that can be done in any number of ways, but generally that's the whole thing is find out what you're not as good at as you want or need to be. And then when you've got plenty of time, see how close to optimal you can get that thing.
Got it. And I do think that in specifically, this makes it easier to identify that because you're looking at five buckets, you know, and they're very specific in terms of what they are and what they'll give you. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, and it's often easier for team sport athletes because you're always going to have different, you know, players on a team. Mm. And so you have that ability to compare right away. So it's instantaneous feedback. You know, when you're not, let's say you participate in kind of more of an individual sport or you're just training on your own, sometimes then you have to be a bit more objective and certainly not, delusional like Phil.
Well, I mean, this whole starts, if you can't be relatively objective, then you're probably not listening to this podcast and this won't do you any good. But if you can take a look at yourself, and it doesn't even have to be hypercritical. Again, this is, you know, we're going to get to it, how it applies for different sports in a minute, but this is all just to take a real look so you can perform better, feel better, just based on whatever your own criteria is.
Yeah, and I would build this layer cake. So, you know, once we've done, like, we've found that deficiency and we've attempted to address mm-hmm. it, well, now we want to look very intently at the sport mm-hmm. or activity, whatever it is. It could be tennis or gardening, but you have to determine, well, what's the primary, major, most important requirement of that sport? So now, okay, you've got yourself shored up, but now as you're getting closer to your peak season, you want to be doing the kind of training or working along the force velocity curve at a point that's very specific to what your, you know, demands of sport are, and thus you'll be best prepared for peak performance.
Yeah, and I think that what popped into my mind when you mentioned that was that it seems like, especially for, you know, just the everyday athlete, which we champion here on the show, endurance, like needing a base of endurance is just sort of, people understand that. But when it, or they understand and they sort of absorb that and they identify that's something they need. But it seems that the strength, power, and velocity, all three of those, you know, of course, and the two in between, those are, I don't see those identified as much as something that I need, especially just for a pursuit or like, you know, like a casual sport, but they seem to be vital. So I just think that I want you to help me kind of flesh that out and because it seems like they're a little bit further behind in terms of what people bring up as they need to work on behind endurance.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question, you know, compared to how I analyzed your previous question or one of them.
John, we're not giving you layups here. It does seem to be true though, that especially for the casual athlete, like if you really need the power or the strength or the velocity, it's a little bit, I don't know if it's a harder sell or it's not as close to the surface as, hey, I need to get my, you know, my endurance. I need that.
Yeah, and I think I understand. So yeah, obviously endurance seems to be clear, and you know, folks look at that, you know, durability, fatigue resistance, aerobic fitness. It's readily palpable. That when you look at agility and you know, just that ability to move athletically, combine mobility, stability, reactivity, and fluidity. Sure, okay, people get that, but then. Because strength, speed, and power are on the same curve and they sort of interrelate, and training on one capacity will help you to some degree on those other ones. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to do, you know, I'll do some lifting or, you know, I'll do like some type of hip work or something. And yeah, you're going to get 6 out of 10 widgets in your bucket. But if you want 8 or 9 out of 10, or maybe even 10, then we really have to look at this curve specifically, because we have to match the beast with its applications.
Got it. Well, we're going to get into specific examples here in just a minute, but maybe before we get there, let's say if power is your goal, what would you sort of prescribe as a way to build more power?
Yep. And if power is the focus, we basically want to spend more time in the middle of the curve and less on the ends. So I'll explain that in a moment. But first I want to say, however, we want to occasionally just touch the ends of the curve. So in other words, have a little bit of work on max strength, have a little bit of work on max speed, because they're components of power. And so we don't want to see those things sort of like drop away and have us like, you know, only focus on power. But again, that's how I would do it. And with power, we always recognize it's kind of a split personality. You know, you have this muscular power and you have aerobic power. They do relate, but one is more about, you know, that those zones of training, and we've got, you know, we're somewhere above the lactate threshold, headed towards the VO2 max. And so that's where power is looked at aerobically. And then, we also have the, power in terms of, you know, can we measure that from, you know, a speed and force generation capacity? Having said that, I know I rambled, but yeah, if power's the goal, we're going to mostly work in that middle of the curve. And so if I use examples, I would say, we probably don't need to do too many 1RM lifts or too many max velocity sprints. What we really need to be doing is lifting and pushing and pulling and running with moderate velocity, moderate resistance to, again, create that power capacity, which is the ability to rapidly deliver force at a high level and sustain it for greater amounts of time.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay. So you're practicing what you want to get out of it.
Yes. And I feel like that was a bit awkward for me to work through, but I can, kind of flesh this out a little bit further by saying in the force to velocity, I think every day in the last 4 or 5 episodes, I have had trouble with
my good, man. You're all set.
Okay, so in that force to velocity relationship, if we value one more than the other, like again, speaking of force or velocity, not necessarily talking about power like it was a moment ago, you just do most of your training where the goal is. So like I wanted to say that, but also I would say we have to recognize, because these exist on a curve and they do relate, there's that crossover, 6 out of 10 widgets in your bucket, however you want to say it, I want to have people recognize that that speed requires a foundation of strength. I mean, you have to get your strength up to a certain level where you can produce the force to accelerate your mass over the momentum, blah, blah. And also, max speed, occasionally touching on it, can help you with your strength, because maximum speed has the highest level of motor unit recruitment in those type 2B muscle fibers, the extremely glycolytic fibers, and the alpha motor neurons, which are, you know, the nerves that that spark those babies. And so it's wise, even if you have, let's say, a power lifter and an Olympic 100 meter sprinter, so that would be the difference between force and velocity. Most of the training for the power lifters in strength, most of the training for the sprinter is in speed. But sprinters lift weights, and power lifters, not often do they sprint, but they do some rapid movement training in the weight room.
Mm, absolutely. Okay. Well, I'm tracking you there, but I think I'd like to hear a couple of examples. So maybe you could just pull a few of just a sport and a person, and kind of connecting what we talked about today with the athlete's goal in that certain discipline.
Yeah, and I think that'll make this come together. You know, the science there is kind of simple, but mm-hmm. You know, when we start talking with all those terms, it can get confusing. So I can probably make this more clear. I've got a youth soccer player. This was Simon, and basically looking at some off-season training to help him, you know, get ready to show up at the first day and secure his spot. So it's pretty much what my assignment was. And we did a look on that force velocity curve. And so we said, all right, let's talk about strength first. Since that happens to be the first point in the curve, if we're starting from the top down. And oftentimes in strength and strength training, we have a term, especially in athletic preparation: how strong is strong enough? So in other words, you have to be strong enough to, again, do those skills, generate the speeds. Working beyond that is counterproductive. You only need to get so strong. Now, a lot of people need to get to that point, but mm-hmm. that's what we looked at. Simon, first of all, we said, okay, as a developing athlete, 15-year-old, Simon could have used a little more strength. And so that was the first thing that we set up, was, okay, let's look at building strength using, you know, mostly heavy lifts and just basic movement patterns: squats, lunges, deadlifts, presses. Now, this was COVID times. And so, dad got involved, and, the kids had gotten older, but they still had the old backyard swing, kind of like gym swing set thing they had in the backyard. So mm-hmm. with a little bit of input from Coach Jay-Z, they went to Home Depot and they got some pipe and some cinder blocks and 5-gallon buckets and mortar and sandbags, basically created a pretty nice little training center. So they could do some of those lifts, and it kind of looked like an old strongman thing, you know, the pictures I saw, which was so cool. And then we supplemented that with some core and mobility work, you know, a few push-ups and pull-ups, you know, sculpting the guns, that sort of thing. But basically we built the strength using the heavy resistance in the basic patterns. And I'll have to get back hold of these guys and find out what their ultimate budget was, but I'm going to bet you they spent between $50 and $60 to create, a pretty nice training center. And I think that's very important during these times for folks to know that that's available.
Yeah, definitely. So you started just by building enough strength, and then where'd you go from there?
Well, then we looked at, back to that sport specific thing. And so really what did Simon need in soccer? And one of the key elements of soccer is what's called repeat sprint ability. Mm. Sure, you need agility, you need endurance. We know this, but the ability to turn on the jets pretty quick and not have too much time to recover and do it again and over again, that's one of the elements of participation, competition in soccer. So that was the main goal and his sport requirement. And we thought about, it's like, okay, well, let's give you a great toolbox, a full one, where a lot of your teammates and competitors probably, you know, won't have as many as you if we develop this. So we combined his aerobic and muscular conditioning and used different distances on the field. It's important to play like on the pitch, you know, same terrain surface. Intervals, cones, change of direction work. That's what we did, manipulating, you know, effort, time, and rests. His max velocity was pretty good. You know, he's a pretty quick kid. So I kept him more in, this is the final answer, you know, in the speed strength realm. So that would be that fourth dot on the curve, because that's where acceleration and direction change live. You know, that's that ability to, you know, to push out and move and control, which is a little different than max velocity, you know, type of training. So we didn't need to make this kid faster in his absolute speed. We just needed him to be able to generate about 90% of his speed and recover quickly and do many repeats. And so this is a fairly specific example of using mainly 2 points on the curve.
I love that. I love that. I'd love to check back in to see, you know, just sort of as he got into the season, or maybe you know this, John, how did, you know, how was the before and after performance, even if it's just anecdotal?
Yeah, well, he accomplished his goal, which was, you know, starting position and getting through a successful season, performing well without, you know, fatiguing out and tanking or getting injured. So, and those are always amazing. Big goals.
I love that. I love that. Love to hear the example. Do you have another one for us?
I do. And this one is, I think it's a really interesting one, because now we're looking at a cyclist. And so this was Brittany. And here's the situation. COVID times resulted in essentially no race season. And she wanted to work on improving her conditioning in order to place better in time trial races. So that was her main focus in the cycling world. You know, folks know they're, you know, different types of bike races, but the time trial is basically the solo race against the clock, often called the race of truth. And, you know, the riders, you know, leave at staggered start times. And it's really a test of the body. And so typically up to distances of about 40K, which is 24.8 miles, that you'll see available on the circuit. And she had plenty of time to focus because, again, there wasn't anything coming up. And so here's an athlete. I agreed with her. She felt her endurance and her aerobic conditioning were already quite good. And that was because she rides a lot. You know, she would ride, you know, fluctuates a little bit with the time of the year, but 150 to 200 miles per week. So that's pretty good volume for a road cyclist. USCF category 3, I believe. And feels like, you know, she kind of feels like, as she's explaining this to me, she can go all day. I mean, she's saying this, I have the endurance, I can ride, but I just can't push that big gear in the race of truth like I think I should be able to.
I love this. I think that this is, well, first of all, I like the way that she articulated her, like evaluated herself, honest, straight, you know, like just, like really accurate, it feels like. So I'm excited. So what did you guys do?
Yeah. And she was, she found me, from one of my triathletes that I work with, because, you know, they were talking and da, da, da. And she was happy or impressed with the results that, this guy was getting. And so that's how she found me. But, we talked about power, and what's really interesting is power, like PK. It's at the heart of cycling. And it's easily measured these days with, you know, various, you know, power pedals, watt meters and things. And it's really what she was saying she needed more of. And this is, it's just a clear example of watts. How much power can you produce at a given effort level, which is usually measured in heart rate. And oftentimes, again, is not totally cycling specific, but this is called FTP, or functional threshold power. That's the target. You know, what's your, you know, what's the average amount of power that you can sustain grinding on your bike for an hour. That's your FTP. So that's what we said. Oh, well, we need to develop this. We don't need to increase your riding mileage and improve your endurance. It's already pretty doggone good. So we kind of came into it with that. And I said, well, because power has that split personality, it's got that muscular fatigue resistance component as well as cardiorespiratory efficiency. And anybody who's done any, particularly like time trial cycling, knows this. Your quads blow if they're not tough. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, what kind of a heart you've got. If you don't have power producing legs, I mean, glutes and hammies too, but particularly quads, you ain't going to make it. And so this is where things were pretty good. So, Brittany, you know, she'd had an athletic background, played some different sports, and she was already reasonably strong. So I was looking at her and I was saying, well, we don't need to make you stronger. You are strong enough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She just doesn't have the ability to apply her strength repetitively, you know, so that's where the power came in. So now I said, okay, let's focus mainly on power development in the weight room, which is her home gym. She's got some lifting experience from her athletic career. And so she's got a corner of her garage. She's kind of set up. She still gets a vehicle in there, but she's got a rack. So she's got a power rack and an Olympic bar and a couple things. And again, her square, it's less than 10 by 10, but you know, she can back a vehicle out and sweep it, and pretty cool setup. And so that's a little bit more of an elaborate example than the one that Simon had. But again, you can find a way to do this stuff, which is one of the points I would always make. So, okay, I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to manipulate reps to fatigue with varying rest breaks. And so because she had good lifting mechanics, she's a good front squatter. You know, she's got that mobility. She can, you know, use a rack, front rack position. I like the front squat because, again, it's a little more sport useful and quad loading. And so I was like, okay, let's do this. So we had her doing some front squats with a kind of like a maximum sustained power cluster set. So I can explain that. I took her down to probably about 50% of her 1 RM. I mean, I think we checked it, you know, she's easily 1.5, 1.75 body weight that she could do for a triple. So I'm like, that's good enough. You know, we don't need to get you stronger. We just need to get your power up. So I got a lot of numbers I'm going to spew off. I would have her do sets like this. 4-4-4-3-3-3-2-2-1-1. And what that means is that's a cluster set. So that's one set where she would do four reps, take a really short break for a couple seconds, a breath or two, four more reps, then down to threes and so forth until she got done. That was 25 reps using about half of her max possible weight for 1 RM. We guess. Well, then how we looked at it is if we just took that weight and said, why don't you just do a straight set? She could only do about 15 reps before she hit failure. So by taking the cluster set, the rest pause method there, she was able to get 25 reps in per set, thus a measurable work increase, which then correlates specifically to increased power production.
Interesting. Okay, I like that. And so just by pausing with the weight still on and then going after it. So she was able to just basically get 10 more reps out of it by clustering it.
Exactly. And you're really just learning to live under load without getting gassed.
Yeah, I love it.
Live under that's load cool. without getting gassed. That's got to be a book. Let's get on that. But having said all that, that stuff was secondary, you know, to her goal, because primary was being on the bike and developing that side of the power equation, which is, of course, raising the lactate threshold. And,
sure.
You know, how we do that. You know, the cyclists also, not only do they love power, they love the zone models. And so, you know, I live in that world with the cyclists. So we did a lot of zone-specific training, you know, using zone 3 and 4 primarily to do that. And this was very effective because she hadn't really done that much of that type of repetition or interval-based training. You know, she'd just gone out for long rides, and then sometimes at the end they'd sprint it out. You know, and right. Again, that'll get you so far, but eventually you got to start doing this more specific training. And so that was, you know, we did some things in the weight room as described, but we did, you know, as much as we could reasonably fit it in, 1 to 3 times per week, these rep or interval-based sessions that really develop specifically the aerobic power and raising the lactate threshold. And so to dance on the ends, we would just occasionally throw in a couple of heavy lifts, you know, again, doubles and triples, didn't need to go to singles, or a few sprints on the bike just to keep sharp. But mostly we just lived in the middle of the curve in the power realm, because that was the, kind of like the only thing she needed. And as maybe a final point, as with most endurance athletes, we really need to work on recovery, you know, and that's not just a passage of time, but a process. And so, okay, let's make sure that your nutrition's on point. And athletic nutrition's a little different than someone who's ill or even a gen popper. So we did that. We looked at sleep again, just, you know, making sure it was good, use a few metrics, and then easy training. And that's where I think a lot of endurance athletes struggle so much. I can convince most of them to do this hard stuff because people like that. You know, they occasionally like to suffer and get their ass kicked, but what they don't like to do is back off and go easy, and they don't feel it's hard enough. But I was like, nope, if you have to work with me, if you're going to get to do these hard things, you have to give yourself some of these really easy zone one experiences and mobility work in the gym and all that, where you're not tired and sore. And so finally, you know, we did all these things, and her numbers are up now. She hasn't tested that yet, but it looks like the 2021 season, some of that's starting to come onto paper, and some people are telling me there's already some races available that they're signing up for. So we'll see.
Interesting. So I was going to say, this is one where there's going to be a pretty stark before and after, or an opportunity for that, at least in terms of, you know, because it is the race of truth, as you said. So I definitely am curious. All this is going to be the methodology and her dedication. She's going to be able to actually measure it with just a hard number.
Yeah. And you know, obviously it's easy for us to measure. Okay, well, now we see that your average power at given heart rate has gone up. So we've got data, your training data, but competition is where it really matters, at least in her case, because of her goals. And so, yeah, she's going to get, hit a 40K and, probably be pushing close to that hour mark, which I think is her goal. I mean, you know, give or take, but we'll see.
That's awesome. Well, check back in. You know, I'd like to, let's see how she does in future episodes. Well, John, thank you. I think that, as always, for me, I guess with how my mind works, I love the examples, you know, putting the theory into play and just talking about some real world applications. Cool thing about this is that, you know, it aligns with everything that we have always talked about. Just, you know, you can get to where you're going, but first you have to establish your goals, and then the conversation flows from there and you can apply the different tools that you have.
So precisely. And it's always my honor to work with these lifetime athletes, you know, and we try to make the science meet the common sense. Today I might've been a bit more sciencey, but you know, if you're interested in optimizing your training on the force velocity curve or even elsewhere, take a look at your assets and liabilities and also your sport demands. And then if you need a little help from there designing and implementing the right program, consider some coaching services with me at the Lifetime Athlete. And since holiday season's coming up, you might need a t-shirt or a hoodie or a tank that says "Hard to kill, unleash the beast, die healthy, die fast, die late." Hey, best to you. Thanks again, audience and PK, and catch you guys next time.
Goodbye, everybody.